Is the law the opposite of the gospel? I've written an article in the latest Issues Etc. journal titled, Is the Law Bad? Some Myths About God's Law. You can read it by subscribing to the online Issues Etc. journal. Just click the red subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. You can also read about Tim Wood's journey from many different Christian confessions to the sound and seamless theology of the Lutheran Confession, the free online Issues Etc. journal. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We've got a series we do here on the program called Top 3 Verses. Pastor Brian Wolfmiller joins us, and we kind of go a topical, I think you could call it that, a topical treatment of the top three verses in the Bible on any given subject. Today it's going to be the institution of marriage. Now, this is a charged subject. There's no doubt about it. Not only is it charged in the civil realm out there in politics, the question of marriage, what is it, how is it defined, who gets to define it? And along with that goes all sorts of other things that are related, like even gender. I get to define my own gender. I can switch genders if I want to, and I could switch back if I want to, and no one can tell me any different. So is the Bible ambiguous on these matters? Is it equivocal on these things like man, woman, and the institution of marriage? We're going to look at the top three verses on that. Pastor Brian Wolfmiller joins us, pastor of Hope Lutheran Church in Aurora, Colorado, co-host of a weekly radio talk show called Table Talk Radio, and host of a video series called Grappling with the Text, a production of Worldview Everlasting TV. Brian, welcome back.
Thank you.
All right, so is the Bible ambiguous or equivocal on the issue of man, woman, and marriage?
No. I mean, this is, in fact, if you're going to debate about something, you could probably find a handful of things to debate about, but when you open the scripture to consider what it says about man and woman and what it says about marriage, there's no debate at all. It's very, very clear. I mean, starting in the beginning when God makes Adam and Eve, it's explicit that God made them man and woman, and then gives them to each other as husband and wife, and that's what you have there is marriage. And it has always been this way from the very beginning, so that even later, when we hear Jesus talking about it, he'll talk about how it was in the beginning. And one of the most beautiful things about the estate of marriage is that it is the one thing amongst the three estates of church and state and family, that marriage is the one thing that God instituted before the fall into sin. So before there was any sin, before there was any death, there was husband and wife. There was Adam and Eve together rejoicing in each other and the one flesh union that the Lord gave them. And so this is fantastically clear and in some ways utterly foundational to the way that we understand the world as Christians.
Okay, so we are going to go back to the beginning, and then in that Matthew 19 passage, as you just mentioned, we're going to go back to the beginning again, the way Jesus reads those verses in Genesis. But take us to Genesis 1 and 2, to the first of the top three verses that deal with marriage, and take it apart for us.
Yeah, now this is, I'm lumping these together. I don't know if people are going to think this is cheating, but really there's kind of three places that we want to look in the Bible to consider marriage. I mean, there's a lot of different places we can look, and, you know, that's one of the downfalls of our top three idea, is that we don't want to give the idea that there's only three places to consider about all these things in the Bible. But for a start, when you start to look into these things, these are going to be the places that you want to look. And the first one is Genesis 1, verses 26 to 28. Now, it's an amazing verse in any number of ways, because God has finished now making everything else. It's the sixth day of creation, and so God has made the light and dark. He's made the space and the sea. He separated the land and the water, and then He's filled the light and dark with the sun and the moon and the stars. He's filled the sky with birds, the sea with fish. And day six, he's filled the land with all sorts of animals and creeping things and everything else. And then in verse 26, then God said, and these are the words, "Let us make man in our image, according to our likeness. Let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, and over the cattle, over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth." So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them. Then God blessed them and said to them, be fruitful and multiply, fill the earth and subdue it, have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, and over every living thing that moves on the earth. It's just such, in fact, fantastic and beautiful words. And there's so much to pull apart there. Todd, you tell me what's most interesting to you, and we can talk about that.
Well, okay. Let's first of all just talk about how male and female he created them. There's that. It's a little, almost like a kind of a Shakespeare thing going on there. He made him, he made them.
Yeah, in fact, the word is, it's important that the word is created. That there's two Hebrew words that are, well, really three Hebrew words that are behind the creation. There's one that we normally translate create, one that we translate make, and another that we translate build, which is used uniquely later in chapter 2 for Eve. But the word create appears in Genesis 1:1, the very first verse. God created the heavens and the earth. And then on every other day, he's making. It's a different, distinct Hebrew word, asah, instead of bara. And so he's making until it gets to 27, the verse that you quoted there. And then it's back to this word create, which emphasizes the out of nothing, that there's something very unique here. And it's created three times. It's one of the hints of the Trinitarian, that this is the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit working, that it's a personal act of creation. And it says, and so it says, he created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. And then, just to make sure that we don't mistake that this was just the creation of Adam, God says, male and female, he created them. So it's not that Adam bears the image of God. It's that Adam and Eve both bear the image of God. Both are created in the likeness of God. Both are given an original righteousness, fear, love, and trust in God, but that there's this distinction between male and female right there at the very beginning.
We obviously have here just kind of, this should go without explanation, but it in this day and age, as we said at the beginning here, Brian, it does require remedial explanation, and that is, there are only two kinds here. There's one kind, two, I guess we'd say genders or sexes, here. There's no gradient between male and female. There's no switching back and forth. Adam doesn't say, hey, I'll be Eve for a day or something like that. This is a pretty clear and strong distinction between man and woman.
Yeah, there is no gender fluidity, and the Bible knows no such thing. And really, when it gets down to it, the biology also knows no such thing. Part of the problem, I mean, really part of the problem that we're faced with in our modern society, as we keep hearing all of these kind of these news stories about gender dysphoria and all this sort of stuff, is we are seeing the fruits of Gnosticism. And Gnosticism, remember, in its very most basic form, says that the material world is bad and the spiritual world is good. That's why, the old Gnostics thought that death was a release. Now my spirit could go be with the gods while my body goes and decays. And in fact, when you push Gnosticism a little bit further, Gnosticism understands our physicalness, the material part of our humanity, not only as bad, but in some ways it's holding us in bondage, so that we can say things like, I'm a man trapped in a woman's body, or a woman trapped in a man's body, or that the gender that I identify with is different than the gender of my body. That's just the fruit of Gnosticism, which is able to see my body as a prison or as an enemy to my real self that needs to be mutilated, destroyed, or somehow overcome. Now, the scriptures do not permit this Gnosticism. They do not permit us to be anything disconnected from our body. In fact, when the Bible identifies death as the unnatural separation of body and soul, it's pointing out the fact that we are meant to be in our body forever, and that's what we confess in the resurrection. So we're seeing this this confusion, which is just kind of the full fruits of Gnosticism manifest in our society, but the Bible speaks against it. I mean, there is no you apart from the body that the Lord has given you. So if you want to know if you're a man or a woman, you can just check and you'll see.
So only one other thing real quickly on that Genesis passage, because we will come back to it in Matthew 19, and that is God gives them to each other for each other. God invents marriage.
Yeah, that's right, and that's very, very important. And for a purpose here, and we see here really in Genesis the primal purpose of marriage. Now, we traditionally talk about three purposes of marriage, but here this is fundamental when God says, be fruitful and multiply. And that's only possible, it's not possible with Adam, and it's not possible with Eve. It's only possible when Adam and Eve are bound up together. So marriage and procreation, marriage and family, marriage and having children, these are bound up together. And in fact, that is what makes it good. Whenever God identifies the things in the first 6 days of creation as good, it's because they support the bringing forth of life. And so marriage now becomes that supreme good, because in Adam and Eve, now life is brought forth, and God can look at them and say, this is very good.
The next verse, before we go to our break here, the next verse is going to be Ephesians 5, beginning at 22. What's there?
Yeah, well, just in fact, Todd, if you don't mind, real quick on Genesis 2, because this is there's a little bit of a note that God gives us in Genesis 2, where God actually builds Eve from the rib, bone of my bone, flesh of my flesh. And then this most important verse, and probably this is the verse that we should focus on the most, and we'll see it in the next few verses, is Genesis 2:24. Therefore, man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and they shall become one flesh. And they were naked, man and his wife, and they were not ashamed. So this verse, the two becoming one, is going to be really the primary text that both Paul in Ephesians 5 and also Jesus in Matthew 19 are going to talk about.
What's the Ephesians 5 passage deal with?
I'm turning to it now. Now, this is an amazing sort of thing, because Paul in Ephesians 5 is talking about the table of duties. And so he's going through the different vocations that were given in creation and in the church. And he takes this up, the question of marriage, in Ephesians 5:22, where he says, wives, submit to your husbands as to the Lord. And then in verse 25, husbands, love your wife just as Christ loved the church and gave himself for her. And now we see in Paul's teaching that this picture of husband and wife, this gift of marriage, is in fact more than just a testimony of the goodness of creation, but that Paul is saying that when I speak of husband and wife, I'm in fact speaking of more than that. I'm speaking of this picture of how it is with Jesus and his bride, the church. It's really, really quite stunning.
Pastor Brian Wolfmiller is our guest. When we come back, we'll stay with that verse, Ephesians chapter 5, and we'll talk a little bit about Matthew 19. Top three verses regarding the institution of marriage. Pastor Brian Wolfmiller is co-host of a weekly radio talk show called Table Talk Radio and host of a video series called Grappling with the Text, a production of Worldview Everlasting TV. Stay tuned. On which my mind and spirit feed, but flesh and blood needs flesh and blood, and you're the one I need. Flesh and blood needs flesh and blood, and you're the one I need.
Throughout the 50 days of Easter, sacred music for the world. LutheranPublicRadio.org. Listen 24/7 to sacred music for the Easter season. LPR, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
The grace of God, the church's music, the Lord's Supper every service every Sunday, preaching Christ crucified and risen, our hope for years to come. There is hope in St. Louis, Hope Lutheran Church, that is. 5218 Neosho Street, St. Louis, Missouri. Find us on the web at hopelutheranstl.org.
Grace, faith, Scripture, and Christ alone. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
We don't look to the Anne Voskamps and the Beth Moores of the world for what it means to be a Christian woman.
Adrienne Dorheinz talking about her presentation at this summer's Issues, Etc. Making the Case Conference.
We look first to Jesus, and his word tells us that a godly woman is marked by things like repentance and piety, humility and grace. And ultimately, this kind of woman lives a really full life in faith. She has Christ's name on her, she receives all the blessings he has to give, and she rejoices in those. That's what the life of a baptized woman looks like, and that's who the Lord has created us as his daughters to be.
You can meet and hear Adrienne Dorr-Heinz, Making the Case for Biblical Womanhood, Friday, June 10th and Saturday, June 11th at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference in Collinsville, Illinois. For more information, visit issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 10th and 11th in Collinsville, Illinois. Folks, we already have more than 200 listeners registered for the 2016 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference. The attendance this year for our summer conference is limited to 400 total. Registration is $100. It includes meals on Friday night and Saturday afternoon and evening. This is the premier conference for the laity, the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, June 10th and Saturday, June 11th in Collinsville, Illinois, about 15 miles east of St. Louis. You can find out more and you can register for the conference at issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org, or call 618-223-8385, 618-223-8385. It's our series Top 3 Verses. We're talking about the institution of marriage. Pastor Brian Wolfmiller is our guest. Now, the Ephesians 5 passage that we started talking about before the break really kind of explains to us what marriage is intended to show us theologically and why it's an additional reason why we don't go tampering with this thing that God invented. Take us in there, if you would.
Yeah, that's right. And in fact, so speaking of marriage and speaking of your conference this summer, this is going to be great to be there. And Carrie, you know, who is my bride, normally says, well, you go to your conferences and you have fun. But when I showed her the stuff on this one, she said, I want to come too. So she'll be there. We're looking forward to it. This is this picture of marriage. Whenever Jesus wants to talk about happiness and joy and give us a picture of kind of a gladness that can't be quenched, he uses the picture of a marriage feast. I mean, this is for all through the scriptures. This joining together of husband and wife is really the highlight of our life in creation. And Paul wants to talk about it, and he just keeps going. It's almost like he can't help himself, because he realizes that this picture of the wife, of the bride, receiving with joy the care that her husband is bringing her, and the protection and the gifts that he has, and this picture of the husband who loves his wife and stands willing at every point to lay down his life completely or in little degrees, piece by piece, for his beloved, is a picture of Christ in the church. And more than that, you know, one of the problems that we have in the church today is we always want to talk about our relationship with Jesus. This word relationship is never in the scriptures, especially not when it comes to how it is with God. Instead, the Bible talks about a unity, that we are united with Christ, that we are one with Christ. And this is how it is with husband and wife. In fact, in some ways, it's not necessarily good to talk about your relationship with your wife. Rather, that kind of invites judgment. I mean, it's fine every now and again, but the main thing is not that you have a relationship, but that you are one. You are one flesh. And to ask the question, how is your one flesh union, really doesn't even make sense. It is an objective sort of thing. So Paul he's trying to talk about husbands and wives, but he just can't help himself talk about Christ and the church. In verse 30, it says, for we are members of his body, of his flesh and his bones. For this reason, and then he quotes this verse from Genesis 2, for this reason, a man shall leave his father and his mother and be joined to his wife, and the two will become one flesh. This is a great mystery. I'm speaking about Christ and the church. But nevertheless, let each one of you in particular love his wife as himself, and let the wife see that she respects her husband. It's really great. He's trying to talk about how it is with husband and wife, but he keeps talking about Jesus and the church. And if this gets confused, you know, through whatever, through abuse or through violence or through neglect or through adultery, through divorce, through despising the gift of marriage, through trying to redefine it, through putting two men or two women in there, whatever kind of nonsense we want to do to tinker with God's gift of marriage, it's going to end up and not only bringing destruction according to creation, but it's also going to really defile the preaching and the picture of the gospel, how it is with Jesus and with us.
So this is not only a great comfort to the Christian husband and wife, that this is an unequivocally good gift that God has given to them to be enjoyed here, that it is His will that they love one another. They don't have to sit there and figure that one out every day.
Yeah.
But also a daily reminder to them, although be it through a very fallen lens here, a daily reminder of Christ's love for the church.
Yeah, that's right. Luther said it, and this is maybe the opposite of the thing you're pointing out, but it fits together quite nicely. Luther says, there's no better way to prove that you're a sinner by trying to live together with another sinner. So that we have this high calling of husband and of wife in this life. I mean, not everybody, but everyone who's married does. We have this high calling. We realize constantly our own failings and are brought daily back to the Lord and His great care for us and His great love for us. And so we rejoice in His sacrifice, His dying love for us. And now this, in fact, sets us free. It sets the wives free to be subject to their husbands, and it sets the husbands free to love and die for their wives.
So let's look at Matthew 19, the third of the top three verses that you've chosen for today, and a simple answer to the question of how Jesus thinks about marriage.
Yeah, the Pharisees are always trying to trick Jesus up, and so they go to this divorce question, which was apparently a sticky question for them. They were getting looser and looser divorce laws in the culture. Now, they're not nowhere nearly as bad as we are. I mean, we have this no-fault divorce, which means for any reason you can divorce. I mean, the Pharisees had, if the wife burnt the food or something like that, then the husband could come and divorce them in some of their laws. And we look at that and say, that's ridiculous, but it's a million times better than what we have. I mean, you don't even have to do anything wrong, and you can get a divorce nowadays. But they bring these kind of legal questions to Jesus, and they want Jesus to sort it out. And Jesus takes them right back to the two verses that we looked at in Genesis 1 and Genesis 2. So starting in verse 3, Matthew 19:3, the Pharisees came to Jesus testing him and saying to him, is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife for just any reason? And he answered and said to them, have you not read that he who made them at the beginning made them male and female and said, for this reason a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. So then they are no longer two but one flesh. Therefore what God has joined together, let not man separate. This is really quite stunning. Now, maybe just a couple of things to point out here. The first is this text from Genesis 2. It occurred to me not too long ago that a man shall leave his father and mother, that God said that to Adam, and Adam would have had to have said to God, what's a father? What's a mother? He didn't have a father and mother to leave, to be joined to his wife Eve. And I think there's something there. That when God is giving Adam and Eve to each other, it's the assumption of family. And we want to have this connection bound up together as we think about the world biblically, that to be married, to be a husband and wife, is to be a father and a mother. The two things go together. Even if the couple doesn't yet have children, the offices are bound up together. But then this, Jesus says, what God has joined together, let not man separate. That the joining of man and wife is not something that the man and wife do. It's not something that we decide. It's not built upon our promises, our commitment, our efforts, our whatever, our love. But rather, the marriage of a man to his wife is God's work. Just like God created the heavens and the earth, so God creates out of the two one flesh. And this gives this beautiful assurance that you were talking about earlier, that when you wake up in the morning, you don't have to wonder, husbands, if you should love your wives, and wives, if you should respect your husbands. You don't have to wonder if you are bound up to that person. It's true. It's a fact. God has done it.
So the picture here that has emerged from our three verses How would you summarize it with about a minute and a half or so?
Well, when we look at how God has ordered the world, and we try to understand how God has kind of built in His Word into creation, we see it all over the place. I mean, we hear His Word preached in church. We see, in some ways, the way God's creative order expresses itself in nature as well. But especially when we look at this primal and most beautiful estate of marriage, that we see how God intends to order the world, what He calls good, how He wants to bring forth life, and what He wants things to look like. And for those who desire the gift of marriage, you desire a good and honorable thing. For those of you who are in the midst of difficult marriages, know that God who loves you is the one who has put you there, and don't let the devil convince you otherwise. And for those of you who have a husband and a bride, give thanks to God that He has put you in a family, because it comes directly from Him, and you can have that absolute confidence.
Pastor Brian Wolf Miller is pastor of Hope Lutheran Church in Aurora, Colorado. He co-hosts a weekly radio talk show called Table Talk Radio and hosts a video series called Grappling with the Text, a production of Worldview Everlasting TV. You'll find links to these resources under the Listen on Demand page at IssuesETC.org. Brian, thanks.
You got it, Todd.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll have Dr. Peter Scare answer the question, do Luke 6:20 and 7:22 teach liberation theology? We'll have Pastor Tom Baker lead us in a Sunday school lesson on the parable of the Good Samaritan as well. It's a good thing. It was called good from the beginning, and even after the fall, it continues to be the best of God's good gifts here in this life for man and woman. The best of His, we would say, first article creation gifts that He has given us. Now, do we take this gift and abuse it? Yes, we do. But this is why that gift is there, also to show us in this grand, mysterious, and profound mystery that Paul recognizes there in Ephesians 5, the true bridegroom and the true bride, Christ, who gave His life for us so that He might wash us and sanctify us and make us ready for Himself. I'm Todd Wilkin. I'll talk with you tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Pilgrim Lutheran, Santa Monica, California. Emmanuel Lutheran, Terre Haute, Indiana. Trinity Lutheran, San Angelo, Texas. Trinity Lutheran and Emmanuel Lutheran, Holloway, Minnesota. St. John Lutheran, Schaumburg, Illinois. Our Savior Lutheran, Pipestone, Minnesota. Real Lutheran Fellowship, Rochester, Minnesota. Living Word Lutheran Church, The Woodlands, Texas. St. James Lutheran, Logansport, Indiana. St. John's Lutheran, State Center, Iowa, and Trinity Lutheran, West Chicago, Illinois. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, click support, and print a one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll publicize your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. issuesetc.org, click support, the Issues Etc. 300.
Hey, Todd, what have our listeners noticed first when visiting the LPR studios?
Definitely the small size and the dirt.
Well, not anymore, thanks to our friends at the Cleaning Authority. They've turned this man cave into a space that meets even our wives' approval.
Whether it's our office or your home, the Cleaning Authority is your cleaning service provider in the St. Louis area.
To schedule a free estimate or to find out more, visit thecleaningauthority.com. thecleaningauthority.com.